My name is Gerald Davis. I'm 56 years old here in April. I was born here in Revelstoke back in 67. I've been gone for about a total of 10 years, but been here for about 45 years. Currently living in a, 8 by 25 foot motorhome, and it needs repairs. We were living at a campground for 10 years. Due to differences with the landlord, we ended up vacating that area. And we've now been living in this motorhome since near the end of July of 2022. And, of course, it's now 2023. We are on a waiting list for affordable housing, but that's anywhere from 2 to 5 plus years before we could get on it. And chances by that time, I'll probably be dead.
No.
Yes, I actually, back in 2019, I had double bypass heart surgery. And at the time when I went in, I had a heart attack. They shipped me down to Kelowna. And when they put the dye in my arteries, they actually found out that I had been born with a heart defect where all my arteries in my heart are about half the size they're supposed to be, and I shouldn't have lived to see 40. So they were surprised at 52, I was still alive. And they gave me, after the double bypass, they told me I only have about 8 to 10 years to live. So I have an expiry date like a bad carton of milk.
And how is your health from day to day?
Some days are good, some days are bad. Some days I can get around really well, and other days I have a hard time. It makes living in something like this extremely challenging, to say the least. For those who choose this lifestyle, it's one thing, because they can do the research and stuff like that. But there are a lot, and you'll see them. They have trucks with campers on the back. They have wood stoves in them. A lot of them, a lot of them didn't choose the lifestyle. They've been forced into it due to circumstances, lost jobs, injuries, whatever. And there are a lot that chose that lifestyle, but those ones there, you'll see them, they're in the newer motorhomes. They've got the Sprinter vans, they work remotely, and some of them have a really good education. They're very highly educated, but they've chosen that lifestyle to live like that. And that's good if they want to. But would I recommend this by choice? Not unless you know what you're doing, because it's very, very hard.
And your partner came in when we were talking. Do you want to introduce yourself? Say your first and last name and anything else?
Ida Davis. I live in a motorhome.
Why don't you guys give me a little tour? It's nice in here. It's cozy.
Okay, well, back in the back, it used to be the bathroom. But things broke, this is from 88, so things get old, they break, so we're in the process of repairing, and there again, I'm on disability, it takes money, it's not cheap to fix these things, just like a house, it costs money, and nothing is cheap nowadays, so we're working on that, and then you have the little kitchen area, there's currently no fridge, because 88, it died. So it ended up coming out. And our food right now, because it's been cool out, it goes in the cooler in the cab. And that's where our food's at. Over the summer, my son's motorhome, which is beside us, his fridge works. And that's where we kept the food in the summertime, ran on propane. Mm-hmm. So, like you say, again, there's lots of work that has to be done. And then,
I get to do my
and then up in the front here,
when we're in here, so it's nice to, I can do baking and whatnot, so.
The oven works.
Oh, yeah.
So I just baked a cake the other day, and we finished that off, I think, yesterday.
Yeah. And then up in the front, there's kind of a little bit of a living room right now. We got a twin bed on down here, and
place to store our bins. And
we live out of bins. Everything's bins and stuff like that. That's how you live like this.
It's very organized, and you guys have some plants, and I noticed that there's tuck tape around the windows.
Yeah, that's the plastic on because they're single pane windows and they get full of frost if you don't, and the cold air belches in. It's a process of trying to survive in something in this, like this, in cold weather.
And then above your head was where
the AC unit was.
So it was too much of a pain.
Right. Yeah. And then did you add insulation in the wall there?
That's in the front here, that where you see the insulation that I framed in, because at the bunk, it gets too cold. The cab gets cold. So that's been framed in, insulated to separate the two areas. There's eventually going to be a smaller window. There's going to be a window in there so that you can see through when I drive. But it's stuff like that, that it all takes time, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Not much else we can do. We just one day at a time and kind of fix things as they break and try to make improvements. The whole idea with what we're going to be doing in here is this will have interior walls framed in inside the walls that are already on it, mm-hmm. and then insulated and giving that extra insulation value. The ceiling, it will have... It's going to have 2x4 rafters put on the inside of this roof to add structural support. And then there'll be a whole nother roof put on top of this with aluminum to help with snow load, because these things aren't built. They're not, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of like your older 12x68 mobile homes. They're wood rafters with aluminum put on top. They're not designed for the snow load around here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're up shoveling them off and in the wintertime. And when you have bad health or you have health problems, it sucks. Mm-hmm. It really does.
You're parked here at the community center. Just tell me about what your days are like. I'll get you to start.
Our days here, well, we wait for the pool to open so that we can use the facilities, use the showers, go for a swim. It's convenient because we don't have far to go up to the drop-in center, Community Connections, use the food bank. I go to the dentist, doctor's appointments. It's all central. So we don't have to park right uptown and only 2-hour parking and we got to move again, right? So this is convenient for us. And it's not far to walk to where you got to go for appointments. So it works for me.
And where do you go at night?
Down to the truck pullout. That's a safe place to go, because being in town here, you got to watch bylaw and their teepee creepers, as far as I'm concerned. That's my logic on it. They creep around at 6 a.m. and put tickets in your windows.
And it's $200 a ticket per vehicle. Yeah. So it's not cheap. No. And I understand why they have this in place and they wrote the bylaws like this so you can't. It's because they've had problems in the past with people have had wood stoves in them and parking in front of people's homes and belching smoke and going into people's windows. So I understand. It would be nice, though, that throughout the winter, if they could designate some area where we could park, so we're not having to cross the highway all the time. Because, you know, there's, I don't know how many times every day at that highway, at the intersection where you go across to come into town across the bridge, that intersection, every day, you'll see 3+ semis run the red light. Oh, yeah. And you're sitting there as your light goes green, their light's red, and they don't slow down because they come off that bridge at Mach 5, mm-hmm. and then they're back out of the throttle, and they go right through a red light. So every day we have to go across that, we're taking our lives into our hands that we're not going to get creamed and killed by a semi truck. It's rough. And then you're only down there, we go down there for the night, you get up in the morning, you have a coffee, and then we come here into town. We sit here, I go in, I use, you know, we don't have power we plug into, so we have batteries that we charge in the motorhome for lights. So we have a generator that we plug in at nighttime to help to charge those batteries, but, you know, all we have for entertainment is a laptop. So we come up here. I go in, use the Wi-Fi, download some movies onto it, charge that battery up, and we're here for, you know, 6 hours, 7 hours. And then we got to fire back up. And these are carbureted engines. It takes them 10 minutes in the cold weather to warm up, right? So now you're using more fuel. And it's it's not cheap. Anybody who thinks they're saving lots of money doing this, they're not. We average with this motor home, just going from here to the truck pullout and back, $200 a month in fuel. Yeah. This has got a 35-gallon tank, so you don't let it get below a quarter tank. And every once a week, we put $50 in them, and that keeps them up at a half a tank. But it costs us $200 a month just to drive them, you know, not even 10 minutes in a day.
Do you mind me asking, and I know it's a personal question, you can say no, but what is your monthly income? What do you live on?
Right now, because we're not paying rent, as per se rent, we get about, it works out income total, just over $1,500 a month. That's for the two of us. Because I have PWD, which right now is $977 a month. And then I have my Canadian Pension Plan disability, which is $637. So we're in between $1,500 to $1,600. And like we, there's a place that we have where we're going to put our name in on Oscar Street. But in order to get in, you have to have a yearly income of $34,000 before they'll even look at you. I don't know many places in Revelstoke that pay $34,000 a year. I know minimum wage, you're not making that much. You're lucky if you make $24,000, $25,000 in a year.
I was going to ask because I interviewed the Housing Society not too long ago about their new Humbert Street affordable housing that's now filled up, and it's quote unquote affordable housing, but it's, I think, $1,400 or something a month. What do you think about what is called affordable housing in Revelstoke when you're in a situation like this?
$1,400 a month is ridiculous to call affordable housing. If you're like my son, our son is on disability. He's high functioning autistic. He gets max he can get is just over $1,400 a month. A one bedroom apartment, which is in Columbia Gardens, is $1,200. That's not including hydro. If he wants internet, where's his money for food? Even for us, all we'll get is $570 for shelter. So if our shelter is $1,400 a month, yeah, we can get as high as $2,000 a month. But if you take $1,400 out of that, that leaves you $600 a month to live on. Two people, we can scrimp by on $300 a month for groceries if we're using the food bank. But it's not affordable. There's no way in heck it's affordable. If you're working two jobs, you're working 60 hours a week, maybe then you can afford it. But if you're working $15 an hour, 40 hours a week, and how many jobs in Revelstoke are actually 40 hours a week? You know, in order to get 40 hours a week, you got to work two jobs, right? Because most employers, if you're working 40 hours a week, then there's benefits, right? Then there's CPP, there's, all your other stuff that has to be paid. They're not doing it. It's not affordable. Affordable housing, in my opinion, this is just my opinion. If you are low income, you're working, you know, 50 for $15 an hour, you're making $2,000 a month, affordable housing should be 25% of your gross income. At least if you're making $2,000 a month and you pay $500 a month for rent, that leaves you $1,500 before taxes. So by the time they take taxes off, you're still going to be sitting, for a single person, you're still going to be sitting around $1,000 to $1,100 a month, right? At least then, if you have you can afford to feed yourself, because, you know, you go to the grocery store, what do you get for $100 from Cooper's? You get a little dinky bag with six items in it, there's $100, right? Even a single person to eat healthy, you're looking at $500 a month for one person in this time and age with the prices they are. So at least if it's 25% of your income, you can afford to eat. You can afford to have a phone. right? You can afford to have internet. You can afford to pay hydro. You can have a vehicle that you can drive to get to doctor's appointments, to go out of town. This low-income housing, it doesn't take any of that into consideration. It's like, this is what we figure is low-income. No, like, just because these, I see how I see it. The people that are making the decisions, they're the ones that are in power. You know, they're in government for a year, retire, and get $150,000 a year pension. Well, I'm sorry, I don't get it'd take me 10 years to get $150,000, right? They get it in one. They get that every year on a pension. These are the ones that are making the decision. They're so out of touch with reality of what the average person who actually works for a living is going through. It's got to change.
Do you work do you have an income?
No, I don't. I'm the primary caregiver for my husband and making sure that his health is good and making sure medication is, he's getting it when he needs it and food. And that's my job as stay home mom, I guess.
And when you lived in the campground, is it the KOA that you lived in? Which campground?
Smoky Bear, yeah.
And did you live in a trailer or did you live in motorhomes then?
When we first went out there, we were in an RV. And then we went into...
An old 56, 8x40 trailer was brought in. And we lived in that for 8 years,
nine
years. We were in that. Our son was in this one. And he lived in it right beside us for a number of years. So, but yeah, when we first got there, we were in a travel trailer, and then we had this for a little bit, and our son was in a truck and a camper, and then we bought a fifth wheel that I was working on, but then this trailer, it was a real gong show when we were out there with stuff. But yeah, we ended up living in eventually an 8x40 mobile home out there, and the son was in this, and then things went south, and, you know, circumstances, we ended up leaving. But yeah, for a while we were in a trailer.
And you mentioned that you're on a wait list for housing. Who's the wait list with?
The Monashee, as far as I know, and I think we did an application also for Oscar.
And is that through the Housing Society, or who's it through?
I went through the community drop-in center here in Revelstoke
with
Siobhan. Yeah.
Community Connections?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I keep losing my train of thought, but that's okay. You mentioned, I just want to hear a little bit about the community, because you had a term for people who live like you. Do you want to say what that is and what the community's like when you live in an RV?
I call us the Tiggers because we have to bounce like Tiggers from one spot to another, here and there, staying off the radar, basically, right? But it's just a life, I guess. It's just you have to know who is in that community, right? Because there are so many other communities. Like, we have people that live in there. Everyone has their own cliques. So you have people that live in houses, or, you know, everyone has a clique. Well, this is our clique, and I can't change that at this time, right? So, but I like to talk to them, find out where they're from, because they're all interesting people, and they're all from all over different areas. Even people from the U.S. are up here. They like it better here because when they're living in RVs down there, they have a harder time than we are up here. But there is still struggles here in different communities, not just Revelstoke.
Well, that's something I was going to ask you, and I know you're from here, and I don't think this is a fair question because where you're from is important, but I think some people listening to this might ask, why don't you move somewhere cheaper?
There is nowhere cheaper. Nowhere. In Canada or the U.S. or any other place, as far as I'm concerned, they're all expensive. So it doesn't matter where you are from or where, what country or state or province you're from, they're expensive.
And we've done our research. Like, our son, he'll go on Marketplace, like Facebook, and look at the rentals down in places like Kelowna, and it's no cheaper. Even in places as small as Vavenby and Clearwater, it's just as expensive there as it is here. And that's just because, well, you know, most things are, what are they controlled by? they're controlled by your real estate agents, right? A lot of everybody nowadays, property managers. Property, what are property management companies? The real estate companies, right? That's, you know, we have REMAX. They do property management here, right? So the prices are up. It doesn't matter where you go. It's expensive to live. And, you know, as far as the community goes, you have a wide variety of reactions. In any given day, you can have a half a dozen people that just, they just walk past, no two shits given about it, right? They just walk on and they're like, oh yeah, there's a motorhome. They keep on going. And the next ones, they sit there and they stare at you. And they get these dirty, scowly looks on their face like, ooh, they're disgusting. This is gross. And it's like, well, you know what? Come over and talk to us. Like, if instead of looking down your nose, like there's something wrong with this and that we're just lazy and we don't want to work, come talk to me. I don't often interact with people because I have my own issues and kind of mean people just don't always get along. But if a person wants to come say, hey, Jerry, you know, or sir, you know, why do you live in what you're living in? I will sit them down and I will talk to them and I will tell them, you know, just it's frustrating to see people just give you dirty looks because you're living in a motorhome, and especially older ones, right? Because they don't have any money. Well, no, I don't have any money. I can't work. If I could work, I would be working. Like I moved up to Alberta many years ago. I spent 2 years up there. That's where I met Ida up in Alberta. I was driving truck up there. I was doing deliveries all over around by Edmonton and Drayton Valley. You know, I work like a dog. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not afraid to work. But then health problems, my right shoulder went out on me. And I tried to go back to work, and the doc goes, no, you're not going back to work. You're done. You're 35 years old. And the doctor pulled me off work because my right shoulder is full of calcification. I got a great big giant ball of calcification in the muscle. And he said, you'll never work again. But, you know, so it's not the fact that people who live in RVs are lazy, because there's a lot here that they make a lot of money. There's a fella, he drives like a new truck. He rebuilt an older travel trailer. He is a carpenter. He came here 2 years ago, yeah. Fell in love with the place. But he's a carpenter, licensed carpenter. He works every day. And he said, I can't afford to rent here. He says, that's why I'm living in my trailer. He says, because I can't afford to. And he's a carpenter, licensed carpenter.
Yeah. I mean, just to Revelstoke, you grew up here, and I know it's been through a lot of changes. Just talk about how the city becoming a ski resort town has maybe affected how you live.
Well, when I was young, we've always had, like any other city, we've always had crime. Every town, doesn't matter how small, how big it is, it has a certain amount. But I can remember, you know, 8, 9 years old, Halloween. My mom and dad, here's your bag, go trick-or-treat. Right? Let me loose. You can't do that nowadays. You don't dare. You don't let your 8, 10-year-old kid just go. You know, I was 12 years old, we lived down by the sawmill down the street over here. And my grandpa and grandma lived in Farwell, Lower Town. And I'd sit there and hop on my bike and say, Mom, I'm going down to see Grandpa and Grandma. Okay, just give a call when you get there, right? I'll hop on my bike and boom, I didn't want to ride my bike. I walk. I'm 10, 12 years old, and I'm walking 3 miles from our place to my Grandpa and Grandma's. You don't let your kid do that nowadays. It was a small, everybody at that time, there was 7,000 people here, maybe 7,500 people. Everybody knew everybody, right? You could walk out your door, walk down a street, and a person in their front yard would say, hey, how's it going? How are you enjoying the day today? Not anymore. You don't see it. The crime, you know, they say they started building the ski hill, and that's all fine and dandy. but they didn't build enough housing, right? So now you're having this big influx of people coming in. They're taking up the local rental. Heck, I remember I was 25 years old. I could rent a one-bedroom apartment for $350 a month. $350 a month. Ain't doing that now. You know, it's triple that, quadruple that price nowadays. So that's the changes I've seen since they've done with the scale, increasing crime, less housing, far more expensive. Even the groceries, you know, you look at the cost of groceries in within the last 6 months, the cost of fuel in the last 6 months. I know they blame some of it on the war in Ukraine and stuff, but that's a small part of it, right? It comes down to, in my personal opinion, is greed. That does not surprise me, considering what the gas prices, where they've come down a bit. But, you know, when I was 16 years old, my first car, I could take, my car had a 12-gallon tank in it. I could take $20 with that on empty, put it in the tank, and fill my tank up. It was 35 cents a liter. And then it's slowly going up. We kept going up. Now, you know, when we hit a dollar a liter, I figured, oh, it'll never get any higher now. You know, we're talking almost $5 a gallon. Here we were sitting at almost $10 a gallon. Now we're down to about $8.50 a gallon. No, it's not right.
And I know the cheapest place, because I grew up in Lumbee and I go home and see my parents all the time. Okay. And the cheapest place to buy gas is Enderby. And I've started taking my car to get fixed in Lumbee because it's quite a bit cheaper too. And I guess that's kind of what I was getting at when I was asking you about that, because I know everywhere is expensive and crime has gone up everywhere. But just with the inflated prices of Revelstoke being a tourist town and mm-hmm. so many people come here, and of course people can make money off of that, and so their prices will be a bit higher. So I'm just wondering how that affects the decisions you make, knowing that prices are a bit inflated here because Revelstoke is a destination.
It affects every decision you make, whether from how many times you put fuel in your vehicle, to what you buy in this grocery store, what you buy for clothes, even to do work on this. It influences when and how much and what quality I buy. It's just because it's so expensive. You know, we would love to go someplace that was cheaper, but there's an old, you're rebel stuck. You know, you come here, you're stuck here, because basically once you get here, you can't afford to leave because all your money's being spent here and you don't have any money to go anywhere else. You know, that's, you know, the same thing as, you know, BC stands for bring cash. You know, Revelstoke, it's rebel stuck. It's hard to get out of here. It really is. Once you're here, it's hard to leave, just because it is expensive. But also, you know, you look at the scenery. You know, once you're here and you see these mountains, especially, you know, in the wintertime, in the fall, it's gorgeous here. It's beautiful. I understand why people want to come here, but it's hard to leave. It really is.
You mentioned to me, Ida, something about talking with city council.
The husband was working.
Okay. Were you talking to them about your living situation?
Yes, I have been. We go through Austin. He's a city councilor who works at the drop-in. He's the chef there. He's been, along with a couple of other councilors, have been trying to figure out what can we do to alleviate the housing situation here. And not just for, you know, those who are bouncing around, who are in motorhomes and campers and stuff, but just the average person who doesn't have a lot of money. And there's a lot of people who come here, you know, they come here to ski and they don't leave because they fall in love with the town. So Austin and some of the other councilors, even the mayor, they're trying. I think they're actually trying. Of course, progress is slow. It takes forever to get stuff done. This is politics we're talking about. It's a snail goes faster than politics do. So they're trying, but there's, how should I say this? The mayor and the counselors, in reality, don't have any power. It's those who actually work behind the scenes within the confines of the walls of City Hall that have the power. There is, it was from the beginning of January, there was a discussion paper on alternative forms of housing. I downloaded it and I read it from front to back. The person or persons who wrote it, in my opinion, are definitely biased against those in alternative forms of housing. Of course, they cite, oh, everything, anything that's being lived in within city limits has to fall under the BCBC, the British Columbia Building Codes. None of these things meet that. They're not built for, you know, that's typical. They're not built for four seasons. You know what? Most of them aren't. But you can actually go out and buy motorhomes, campers, travel trailers that are designed for four-season living. They're designed for, you know, 3 feet of snow on the roofs. They're designed for minus 60-degree weather because they got four-inch thick walls, well-insulated floors are done. You can get them for living in it. But the person who wrote it is clearly biased against. They also made some comments that said if the city was to go ahead with doing an area and promoting alternative forms of housing and living, that, quote, it would likely cause a slowdown in the processing of everyday permits for building and construction. And it's, okay, no, when somebody goes likely will cause, they are laying out a roadmap for you to see. We don't want this, so if you go ahead with it, this is what we're going to do. We are going to cause you problems with the public. So when the public, somebody's coming in to get permits, and instead of waiting a month to get it done, they got to wait 3 months. Guess what happens? Guess who takes the heat? The mayor, the counselors, because they're the ones running the show, right? That's my perception of it. It's just that how it was worded. This is likely going to happen. Maybe it will, maybe it won't.
So what you are saying is, and I'll read that discussion paper. I did see it, but I didn't read it like you did.
He reads everything very thoroughly.
That's good. That's very good. What the person who wrote it was saying, if you make provisions to allow for people who live in alternative forms of housing, it will backlog the processing that we already have to do?
Yes, that is how it comes across, right, with how it's worded. That's how I took it. I'm pretty sure most people probably would take it the same way. But yeah, they're saying, yeah, it's going to cause a backlog in the stuff that we're already doing, because you're now adding more work for us to do. You know, there's going to be extra expenses because you're not going to have to hire more people. And those who are already doing stuff, they have more to deal with than what they already have.
We live in an expensive time with still working out the wrinkles from the pandemic, mm-hmm. and inflation, the war in Ukraine, Revelstoke blowing up more and more people, like it's an expensive place to live. Knowing all of those things and not having any control over them, what would help you guys the most to live better the way that, like, what kind of help would you like, or what could be easier for you to live the way that you're living?
Really, just not half bounce all the time. That is the biggest thing.
It's exhausting.
Very exhausting. I don't want to move some days. It's like, oh, do we have to? I just want to stay here for a day or two and just recoup, right? Just to gather thoughts or just to unwind, because you're always tense all the time, right? Because you gotta stay, you know, you can't just stay in one place right now.
It's always in your head, like, oh, at 3 o'clock I'm gonna have to go back.
Yeah. And it's not that we want something year-round, and here's the clincher, is we don't expect anything for free, right? If they can have an area set out for the just say from November 1st to the beginning of April, where we're not having to drive across the highway, we're not having to deal with snotty, slippery roads and trying to, you know, this thing is 8 feet wide. You know what this is like when they pile snow in the middle of the road to try to get down when you got traffic parked on? It's hard. And you're taking the chance of you know, losing control, hitting somebody's vehicle, or hitting a person, God forbid. That's all we were looking for, is just a place where these vehicles can be parked for the winter. We don't need running water, because if the sandy dump is open, we can go down there, fill our water jugs up, right? We can empty the sewers if they're, like, we have a porta potty because the tanks in this thing aren't heated. So as long as we can have a place to empty them, to refill our drinking water up, that's all we need, right? So we don't...
place for the garbage to go, right? Mm-hmm. So then we have, it's a safe place. It's being disposed of properly. Yeah. And it's not just spewed all over town or whatever, you know? So
I've talked to some of the other Tiggers, and they've sat there and said, you know, if they could set us an area for the winter where we could park, and, you know, if we wanted to stay there all winter, we could. If they provided, you know, a couple of, you know, some porta potties, a garbage can, a big bin, right? They were willing to pay a monthly fee to have those provided. And they even went, one fellow went, even to have, even if we had to pay a fee to have, you know, bylaw come in, through once a day or twice a day to make sure it's being kept clean, mm-hmm. right? We're willing to pay. Each of us would be willing to pay a monthly fee to the city to have that provided. We're not wanting it for nothing. We're willing to pay our fair share, pay our way. And we told them, and like I told them, Aaron and Austin, you know, and we would be the first ones, if somebody showed up and started being animals and being pigs, we'd be the first ones saying, hey, look, either you clean that up or we're calling the RCMP. We're calling bylaw. We'd be the first ones to call them on them, right? Because we don't want it wrecked. That's because come summer, come spring, we can bugger off. Like we can, once the snow is gone, you can get out behind the dam. You can go out south. There's all sorts of places where you disappear for the summer months, right? You come back into town once a week or twice a week to get fuel, groceries, whatever. It's just during the winter. That is where it's the hardest. That is what we need. Like personally, Ed and I is just a place to park for the winter, right? We don't need power. We don't need running water. It's just a place where we can park. If we decide we want to, you know, even if it's not right close to in town, like it's just outside the city limits, that's fine. If it's a 10-minute drive once a week to come in to empty the porta potty out, to get groceries, that's great. But it's just someplace that we can feel secure, routine. And that's the biggest thing with living like this, with having to move around all the time. You have no routine. But I've, with the wife's permission and the son's permission, have set up a routine. You know, we're down. We leave here by 3:00 in the afternoon. We go down to the truck pullout. We get up by between 7 and 7:30. We're generally out of there between 8 and 9. We're back here. And this is where we park. Mm-hmm. Even myself, if I can't park here, it bothers me, because we're human beings. We need routine. We need structure. And that's how we provide that structure that we otherwise we wouldn't have.
I mean, I have to say, you're not asking for a lot. I would have expected to say we would like a house to live in.
And the reason, like, we won't sit here and say, well, we'd like to have an apartment. We'd like to have a house. Because you know what? There are people in this town that are far off worse than we are. There are people in this town who don't even have a tent. They're sleeping under train bridges. They're sleeping under trees. They're sleeping under a tarp. There are those who need it more than we do. We, at this point, we have four walls and a roof. For the majority of this, it keeps the weather off of us. It needs work, but we are better off than a lot. And those, there are those, like I said, that deserve it more than us. There is a fella, he's in his 70s. He's got problems. You know, he has issues with some of the organizations here in town. But there's gentlemen like him He's got nothing. All he has is a duffel bag and a backpack. That's all he has to his name. And he's 70 years old. He shouldn't be living on the street. Mm-hmm. He should have a roof over his head. I don't understand it. Canada is one of the richest countries in the world, and we can't provide free housing for those that need it. You know, it's because we're a capitalistic country. You go to other countries that have more of a socialistic attitude, your housing is provided for you. Why can't Revelstoke, there's more money in this town than they know what to do with. You know, homes are selling. A house that 10 years ago was sold for $250,000 is selling for $1 million. I was working with a painter here in town, and we restained one of the houses up there, $10 million home at the ski hill. What does it say? Right. And we can't provide free housing for those that need it. And even at that, those people would be willing to pay. They'd be willing to pay some of their money. You know, if they're a single person who's not on disability, but they're just getting normal financial assistance because they have problems, they're not working, they have no issues with paying 25% of what they're getting. There's got to be a solution.
There is a solution. To every problem, there is a solution. It can't be just swept under the rug and ignored. I mean, look at all your tent cities that pop up here and there, no matter what country or province you're in. They're homeless as well as we are, right? And they're far, far off than we are. Like, don't know their circumstances, but that's their life, right? So instead of shoving them out, fix it. Help them, do something, build something, you know. That's all I can say.
How many people, I know there's a lot of people who come here, like you mentioned, the carpenter and people who work remotely in the nicer Sprinter vans kind of choose to come and live here. And I know it's hard to find a room, but that is a choice. But how many people do you think are like you who are living like this without a choice?
I would have to say, if you were to take, say, 100 individuals living like this, I'd have to say you're probably looking at about 25% that didn't make the choice. They, due to circumstances beyond their control, ended up in this sort of a situation. The other 75%, they have the ability to live the way they are. Like I said, these Sprinter vans, they're not cheap. Right. And most of them are customized. They've got diesel heaters in them. They came from the factory like that. You know, there's one young girl. We talked to her. She had a bit of an attitude about stuff. But she's like, she works remotely, but she's like, I'm not spending $2,500 a month on a place. Right. Why should I? I'm paying for this, right? And there's a lot of others that, you know, like I said, even like the carpenter, he's like, one bedroom is $1,200-$1,300 a month. A two bedroom is $60. Basically, most houses in this town, it's $1,000 a bedroom. If it's five bedrooms, it's $5,000. If it's three bedrooms, it's $3,000. But I would have to say, you know, conservatively, 25% don't make the choice. The other 75%, they have the means and the ability to live like this, you know, and those ones there, you can't discriminate against them. If you're going to provide for a small part of that group that live like that, you have to provide for all of them, but you can make it fair. There are ways of doing it. Because you don't want to discriminate. That's, you know, because it sucks being discriminated against.
What would you want people who live in Revelstoke, who maybe own a house or just live their normal day-to-day lives in a comfortable way, what do you want them to know about what the reality is like for some people?
I'd like them to know that this is not easy. It's trying. It's hard. There's days where, you know, you don't want to get out of bed. because you don't want to have to drive somewhere again. You don't want to have to be driving downtown and people giving you a dirty look. Yeah, you know, it's
what I do.
Yeah, the wife just waves at them. But
I wave and smile at them, and I don't. That's their problem, not mine. If they want to be discriminating, well, all the power to them. It doesn't make me feel any worse than I already do. They can't make me feel bad. So I just wave and smile, and I get different reactions when I do that. So I'll get they'll wave, or you know, they'll be like, "Oh, okay."
The only thing I would really like for people to remember is that it doesn't matter at this point in time. It doesn't matter how good a paying job you have, how happy your family life is, how fancy your home is. Just remember this, that you can go to sleep tonight, wake up tomorrow, and it's all gone. You can lose it that fast.
And be in no better situation than we are right now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yep, that's all I can say. Mm-hmm.